operating. My apologies. I've got internet problems at my house. I just sorted it out now, but we are operating, Chair.
The department...
This meeting is being recorded.
The department is the leader of the department, is in the meeting, DG is in the meeting. Or whoever who's leading the department.
There are quite a few people from the department in the meeting, Chair. But
Good morning, Chair. It's Mr. Poster, the PLO to the Minister. The leader of the delegation today is Ms. Rendani Sadiki. She is the acting DG. The DG and the Minister are both out of the country. Thank you.
Okay. So the acting DG is in the meeting?
Yes, as far as I know, she's supposed to be the DG.
Good morning, Chair and members. I am in the meeting. Thank you very much, ma'am. Thank you, acting DG. Aska, the agenda of today.
Briefing by the Department of Agriculture, Rural Development and Land Reform on the introduction to the provincial level planning, beneficiary selection and projected timelines for the settlement of small-scale farmers in poultry, livestock, fruit, vegetable on state land as proposed in the 2022 SONA, and then the consideration of them and adoption of the minutes.
Thank you. Honorable members, I will propose that we add an item of quorum so that we can debate on it, because I don't want colleagues be misled by other colleagues. So let's add it so that we can discuss it. It must be an item after the briefing, before we can get into the any second on that issue, honourable member.
Second, honourable chair.
Thank you very much, honourable Kiva. Let me take this opportunity, honorable member and officials from the department, to welcome you to our meeting. Last, we postponed our meeting because of other matters that were beyond our control. Now we are meeting today to receive the briefing from the department. Hope the department are ready to brief us and to tell us what is happening in the provinces, and tell us about the commitment that was made in SONA. Let's hope this presentation will be what we are expected as the honorable members. I am not going to waste any time, just going to give to the leader of the department to brief us.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning again to you and to members, and good morning to my colleagues. I am not alone. I have got the DDG for Land Reform and Tenure. Land redistribution and tenure reform, and I also have the DDG for food security, who is responsible for the land development support. We have prepared a consolidated presentation that includes the state land allocation and also include the development support that is planned for this land that we are reallocating. I have DDG Ndobe, who will start the presentation on the state land allocation, followed by DDG Mofomakulu, who will brief the committee on the support that is planned for this land. Didi Jindo.
Thanks, Acting DG, and good morning to Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, my colleagues. Indeed, we will provide briefing to the Select Committee as outlined by the Acting DG. Can I be assisted to the presentation? Thank you so much. As indicated, my name is Thierry Ngobe. I'm responsible for land redistribution and tenure reform. In terms of the subject of today, we are going to provide briefing on the introduction of the provincial level planning, beneficiary selection, project timelines for the settlement of small-scale farmers in poultry, livestock, fruit, vegetable on the state land as proposed in the 2022 SONA. In terms of the outline, it will be introduction. Can you go back to the outline, please? It will be introduction, the high-level summary of the whole presentation, the hectares that have been allocated, types of allocation. From item number 5, the progress in terms of the farm assessment that has been done to prepare for the production. We also look at the selection criteria for the support funding and the implementation plan and plans for the 2022-23 financial year. I need to indicate what DG has said, that it will be two of us making the presentation. I'll be starting on the land side, and my colleague will continue on the production side. That will be from slide number 12 going forward, so I'll be angling, piloting from now until slide number 11. The purpose of the is to present progress report on the implementation of the agricultural state land allocation project, as well as related support to the approved small-scale farmers. Next slide. As a form of introduction and a summary, around 2019-2020, there was a process that was initiated through the IMC of Agriculture and Land Reform to identify land that can be released for production by the state. And there was a process to do that which culminated into identification of what is commonly known as 700,000, but the real number is 691,523 hectares that were identified as agricultural state land for allocation. It was also the president went on in 2020 SONA to pronounce about this project and also to indicate what is supposed to happen. And later on, the minister also went to media to put up the plan on how it's gonna be handled, including the advert that went out as part of the allocation of this land. The total number of hectares, 691,523. were identified for redistribution, and to date, 99% of that land has been approved for allocation, which I will explain as we move forward. We are almost at the tail end of the project because only 1% of the land is still to be finalized because of some few challenges that we experienced. In reality, it's supposed to have been finalized in the previous financial year. Can move on to the next slide. As I indicated, in terms of farms, we're talking about 1,535 farms that were identified for allocation. I need to indicate that in terms of what the minister said regarding when she went on to the media and as well as the advert excluded Gauteng because at that time Gauteng already has allocated the two farms that they had. But in total, all the provinces had land except the Western Cape. So Gauteng is not included when we went to media because at that time already Gauteng's land was already allocated and there were only two farms. But the rest of the provinces except Western Cape also had land that was to be redistributed. We used the beneficiary selection and allocation policy as approved as our source and also guideline in terms of how land supposed to be allocated. But I need to indicate that the land that we're talking about, the land that was previously allocated some by the previous government, the homeland system, but not much was done about this land since 1994. So much of the land was already occupied, utilized. So, and that brought some limitation in terms of our application of beneficiary selection and land allocation policy, because where people have rights over time, even though they do not have official documents to prove that they are currently utilizing the land, some had, so there was no way in which government would have evicted those people for that purpose. In the main, those that have proof of occupation over a period of time, they were regularized and allowed to continue, and where possible, leases were issued for them to have a secure tenure in terms of their farming purposes. Apart from that, we also had land that had some claims on it, which in the earlier process, we tried to remove as much as possible land that had claims. But unfortunately, during the time of allocation, there were some few areas where we picked up land that already were still having some claims. And as such, we could not allocate it to anyone pending the finalization of the claims. And as I indicated, in some other areas, instances, there were people that were already utilizing that land. Apart from that, there were land assessments that were done on 654 farms to determine the settlement support that needs to be done for those farms as part of the support, and the process is still going on. Can I move to the next slide? This slide provides a high level summary of what I've indicated earlier on, that out of the 691,524 hectares of land that was identified, 655,375 have been approved through the process that I've indicated using the beneficiary selection and the committee that was set at national level, working together with the provinces. However, there's still remaining 11,000 yet to be approved, but the process is still going on to make sure that they are finalized. Unfortunately, there were two farms, let me say not farms, yeah, let me say farms, two farms that have to be withdrawn. One of them is the one that is well known, the Rahasi farm, which was erroneously identified and later has to be withdrawn because it was going through another process. The other one is the Gwachu farms in the Eastern Cape, which was also later on discovered that there were other processes that were going on to handle this matter and how it's supposed to be finalized, and then it could not be processed through the normal processes that we were using, as there was alternative strategies to deal with the Gwachu land, and then it was withdrawn, and that amounts to 24,000 hectares. Next slide. This just indicates in terms of farms, the total farms that we spoke about earlier on, which is 1,535, and 1,443 are the number of the farms that have been approved, and then the 56 are the ones that are still to be finalized, and the 36 are the one that has been withdrawn. That is a pie chart that just indicates that 4% is the one that has been withdrawn, and the 1% is the one that is yet to be finalized. 95% has already gone through, but if we add the 4%, because it's not going to be allocated anymore, it gives us 99%, and then we're only left only with 1% that is still to be finalized. You can move on. This is in terms of the breakdown by province. Like I indicated earlier on, Western Cape is not included here. The rest of the provinces are there. Those are the number of farms, starting from the Eastern Cape, ending with Northern Cape, with the Mpumalanga and the Northwest having the highest number of farms, and Limpopo following, as well as the Eastern Cape. And those are the hectares in terms of those farms, and all of them, they bring us back to the number that I indicated earlier on of 679-943-0050. Thank you. Can you move on? This is in terms of categorization of the land in terms of the 679, what kind of allocation has happened. The first one talks about communities. These are communities that over time have moved to this state land, utilized it for various purposes. And what we did, we conducted a land right inquiry to determine whether those communities have some rights over that particular land. And in cases where there were those rights, the land have been set aside for their allocation. As you all know that currently, we are still working on the communal tenure legislation and policy. We did not allocate because that will have physical allocate, because that will have contravened or preempt or be in contradiction of the current processes to determine how land should be transferred, whether to the communities or to the traditional council. And that process is still going on, but that land has been set aside and reserved for those communities. Whether it will go to the traditional council, it will go to the communities, that will be determined once the policy is finalized. The next one is the one that is important in terms of the lease agreement. This is land that is for agricultural production, and the land was available for allocation as well as giving leases to those people to ensure that they have got tenure rights over that land. And that amounts to 409,000 hectares, 575. The land that follows is the land that we classify it as donation. This is the land that previously there were commitment by government through proclamation and other related promises that were made to for the communities to actually that land to be donated, and processes to make sure that that land get donated are already underway. Others have already been finalized. Like I indicated, that there were land that were later discovered during the allocation that they have got claims on them, and as such we could not be able to make a determination as to who should get the land, whether it should be reserved for the applicants or for those that are using. In terms of those that are currently using the land, they are still currently using that land and it's been set aside as such. There were also during allocation where rights of farm dwellers and labor tenants were also respected, and through the when we conducted the land rights inquiry and found that they have got rights over that land. And as such, an amount of 8,000 hectares were set aside in order to address the tenure rights of the farm dwellers and labor tenants on those farms. Lastly, it is the ones that I said they were withdrawn from allocation because of what I've explained before. One from the Rahasi, which the land has since been transferred directly to him, and also the Guachu, which the process of settling the matters around Guachu is still going on in the Eastern Cape. And that categorization brings us to the total number of hectares that have been involved in this project, which is 69679-943-0050. Can we move to the next one? Out of the total of 679-943 hectares, 409 were hectares that have been approved in favor of the small-scale farmers for production. Northwest had the top of the hectares in terms of 229,576 hectares that were allocated to the small-scale farmers. This is where the 409, that's where the focus is in terms of supporting them. And my colleague will elaborate more as when it comes in. And lastly, so the last slide on my side. Can we move on to the last slide? Next one. This is just a breakdown in terms of the 409 hectares that I indicated that are actually ready for being assisted. Others already the way they started in terms of providing support to them. And then for now, I'll hand over to DDG Meshamakul to continue with the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
With your permission, Chair, good morning, and good morning to the members of the Field Committee and colleagues. Thank you very much, DDG Ndove, for taking us this far, providing progress as it relates to land. I'm coming in now, members, to then update you on what then we have done to try and spearhead the support that needs to be then given to the beneficiaries that have secured this land. There are core foundations that we ought to adhere to for us to be able to do this. We wanted to have a very scientific basis upon which we can provide the support. So that we take care of the nature of the land that we have, but also clearly understand the beneficiaries themselves in terms of what we needed to do. For us then to understand this process, we conducted skills audit, but also embarked on a comprehensive farm assessment to look at land capabilities, so that it informs us scientifically what we have to do. Just the next slide, please. In so doing, honorable members, we thus far have trained 165 beneficiaries covering 94 farms that the region have spoke to, those in particular that are targeting the small scale farmers. And the breakdown in terms of the females, the males, and the youth is covered in the slide. Next slide, please. You can skip this more or less repetition, just covering the features on the previous slide. Next slide again. This is a high-level summary of what we then came up in terms of the land capability. Perhaps it's important first to just indicate what we wanted to do around the issues of land capability, that we define it as the most intensive long-term use of land for purposes of rainfed production. And this, therefore, is, of course, determined by interaction between climate, soil, and terrain. It's a scientific way, then, of saying what we have, how can we use it. And as you can see on the results here, that we have about 5% of the land, almost over 500,000. That requires a lot of work to be done. We're saying here, not readily usable. It doesn't mean there's nothing that can be done. It basically means a lot of work needs to get into that piece of land for it to bring back to its maximum potential in terms of productivity in the sector. That calls in for very intensive land care programs that we then have to embark upon together with the animal and fertility management program to revitalize that piece of land for it to come back to its original glory. This could, of course, be informed by various, perhaps, non-scientific farming practices that were there before. As Didindov has mentioned, that some of it is in communal space. And if you have overgrazing, you don't have proper camps, and the carrying capacity not being adhered to, you therefore degrade the potential of that land. And it then begins to tell you that you really have to focus on that first if you really want to bring it back to meaningful farming activities. So next slide, please. So this land capability assessment then members was then informing us to really get to know the kind of farms that we have. And we were not using satellite imagery here. We were not using drone flyovers. This was a physical walk into 654 farms to look at various indicators that can inform us in terms of what these farms can be used for. And as the categories have been given by Diligent Level 1 report, I repeat that in Northwest, over 200,000 hectares that colleagues had to try and see what's happening in there. And this exercise has taken a considerable amount of time. As I'm saying, it was not a desktop study, it was really a physical visit to each of these properties and engaging with farmers. Doing this deliberately so that we can clearly categorize using our national policy on a comprehensive rural development support that we have, to say we have vulnerable household level farmers. We have subsistence farmers at a household level. We have a smallholder farmers, we have a medium-scale farmers, we've got large-scale and mega commercial farmers. So we had to understand what category of farming activity is happening in each farm, and what can we as a department intervene to try and make sure that our support package is done accordingly. So the slide you have here then begins to use the indexes we have from 1 to 15 in the land capability index in terms of what we have. And the majority of the land is in the middle category of moderate to high moderate farming. And the rest is either on the side of the skills. But I won't go through in detail on this. As I'm saying, it's a technical but necessary work that we embarked upon for us to be able to understand exactly how we must then we categorize our support. Because those in communal spaces will not require the same support to those that are leased with a higher potential, so that our startup package is well informed, and therefore we really are directly dealing with the issues. Next slide, please. So So that exercise has really helped us in the 664 farms that we've assessed to have a better insight in terms of what we need to do. These are the categories that we're looking at: crops, livestock, both large stock units and small stock units. We're looking at vegetables and fruits as even the task was asking us to do. Next slide, please. So we're then saying now we know the farms, we know the farmers, what are we going to do to get this work done? So we put up a criteria that we'll then be able to follow for us then to be able to start putting up the support as required. The important thing that we're then saying, we've already trained over 136 beneficiaries of those 94 farms. We're saying our priority will go to those, because we know their skills, connected skills audit, we know what they need, and we already provided some degree of training, which of course is going to be ongoing. We will be then also looking primarily on various designated groups as outlined. We're looking at people already showing active interest in the farming business by already being busy doing something in those farms. We're looking at those that will really help the government in job creation, those that are primarily on labor intensive, as among those that will receive priority. We also are looking at what we have in our farmer register, but also this is a live document. We keep updating it. Those already there does not mean we'll be in complete exclusion of farmers that are not there. But we are encouraging our farmers to register in our farmer register so that we really have a clear census in terms of database of our farmers across the country. We're looking at farmers that are not receiving support in various forms of our programs in the department to avoid the issue of double dipping. And where some have received support, we're looking at what they have done that support to account before any consideration is given to them moving forward. Perhaps they might need more, but they need to account in terms of what has been given. Next slide, please. We're not doing this alone. We're looking at close collaborations with our provincial departments of agriculture, where some of our conditional grants is at, and looking at the category of the smallholder farmers under ILIMA, LETSIMA, and CASP, that they will play a very pivotal role in ensuring that this work gets done. We're also looking at using our existing implementation and disbursement models that we have that seem to be working, like the land development support, because already there are existing controls that we have in that space that we are now introducing to this project as well. And among others, this includes using the financial institutions we have through tripartite agreements, where we then disperse funds into those for better control expedite the timelines around procurement and implementation of projects. And among other advantages of this is that farmers get to be the ones sourcing their own production inputs, their own mechanization. You're building a capacity, because now they know once we exit, because we must have an exit plan, once we exit as government, we have created a network between the farmer and various suppliers in the industry. They get to interact as they are doing this. Now they know exactly where to go when they're looking for what. And that relationship is built in terms of also for them to capacitate, and it's part of the capacity building to ensure that farmers really are role players in the industry. We'll provide funding, as I indicated. I will talk to that when we go through the plans for next year. Next slide, please. This is just beginning to outline the roles that were played by our partners. That said, the PDA is a very important role to play here for us to begin to do this work closely together with them, where we are finalizing the agreement, clearly outlining roles and responsibilities, because the PDAs are close to the ground and they will play a lead role in the implementation of this project. I mentioned the use of repurposing some of our conditional grants in the Comprehensive Agricultural Support Program, CASP, together with ILIMA-LETSIMA. so that additional funding is made available to get this job done. Also, repurposing our own existing programs at National Office. Again, figures have been set aside to get this job done. We will then continuously do the monthly monitoring and reporting until we close out the project. Next slide. This is what we have in our books for the current financial year. As DG Ndobe has mentioned, that 1% that he still has to deal with. We are then on our side continuing with the skills audit and the remaining farms to establish the skills gap and the level of education that the farmers have. This begins to inform the kind of training and, of course, phased out over time that we must provide to these farmers to ensure that they really understand what needs to happen for the better productivity of the farmers that now they are having. We will continue to provide training where we've identified these gaps in skills to the beneficiaries of this project. We are tapping in our National Skills Fund for this current financial year to continue to sponsor the skills and capacity development in this space. We have set aside 150 million rand that we are now starting to package business plans for the implementation of the 94 farms that already have been trained and among those that have been assessed. This is just for this current financial year, as we are busy looking at more funding for the project in all of our existing programs that we have. I've mentioned things like repurposing some of our CASP. The beauty about it is that this land is not it's already what we've been working on before, as the Ndobe has already indicated. So it becomes very simple to plug and play in and repurposing our existing programs to then ensure that we leverage more on the existing budget to get the job done. Having done all the work we've done, as I indicated on the farm assessments, the detailed classification of those farms in terms of various levels in the land capability index, but also classifying them accordingly in terms of whether they are the vulnerable household farmers, are they subsistence farmers, are they smallholder farmers, all the way up, knowing what kind of skills they have and they don't have, putting up the training that they need, and also we've developed the startup packages on various commodities that we've mentioned. We're looking at the small stock units. We know exactly what must be the minimum if you're dealing with goats or sheep, or if it's large stock unit. Again, we've costed all those and we know exactly what we now need to do. And we're saying to select committee now, we are at implementation mode with the 150 million rand that we have. And projects are being packaged for implementation so that ultimately we now can start with the work that needed to be done. And members may say, but this process started almost 2 years back. Why are you saying you're only starting implementation now? I don't want us to overlook the basic foundation I spoke to of really understanding the farms, their needs and the people on the ground. In the scope of hectares that had to be covered, a number of farms necessitated that the time that we took really has to be there. And it's like those that are close to the Bible say, if you just run and build a house in the sand, you really are not likely to have a very strong structure. So we spend time ensuring that our foundation is solid before we can start planting a seed in the ground, because we're looking at sustainability of what we're doing here. Jefferson, acting teacher, I think that's the last slide. We can then give back to you and the committee for questions. Thank you very much.
And thank you, colleagues. Chair, we hand over back to yourself.
So, thank you very much, acting DG. Now I'm going to hand over to members to ask questions. Members, honorable members, now is your time. I'll see you with your hand. I see honorable Arnold, his hand. Let me see, is it there? Yeah, it's only Honorable Arnold that I see now, for now. Honorable Arnold, you can continue.
Thank you, Chairperson, and greetings to all the honorable members, and then also to the officials. And let me say, we note the report and the presentation from the department. The Chairperson, I think we need to say this, that the department must ensure that the redistribution process is free of corruption, and distribution must be equitable, and it must be a just process. So we are hoping that that is the process in terms of the redistribution. Then this Chairperson, in terms of the Western Cape, now what happened now to land reform applicants within the Western Cape province who wish to farm within the province? Does this now mean that there is no interested applicants in the Western Cape? Then, Chairperson, just in terms of the 2022-2023 financial year, the amount of 150 million that was set aside, do the department foresee any challenges in terms of the budget resources for this project? And then, Chairperson, the other question that I want to pose is in terms of the assessment of farms. I think it's about 654 farms, which is an ongoing process. It means now that it's only half of the farms earmarked for the implementation and which was surveyed. So we want to check now what is the process going forward in terms of the assessments. And then are the people occupying or leasing the land identified going to be beneficiaries of the scheme? If not, is the government simply displacing one set of land users and replacing them with others? So if they can just respond on that. And then the training only cover aspect of business and entrepreneurship. Are all beneficiaries capable and experienced farmers, or will additional training be offered to those beneficiaries? And why is training only offered in three provinces, Chairperson? I think let me conclude with that few questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Arnold, Honorable Smith, and you'll be followed by Honorable Nguyen.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I have got a few questions. The first one, we most likely, you know, won't get the answer right now. So, but I want to ask, in terms of this presentation, I need a more detailed layout in terms of each province and then per district, in terms of the specifics and the list of all these land and where it is situated, and then what is the analysis of each, as they said that they've evaluated in terms of what it will be used for. Chairperson, the second question I have, in terms of slide 8, I've noticed that there is no mention there of the Western Cape. Why is the Western Cape not a part of that? And then the last question I have is, in terms of the fact that this land are being leased, and the understanding on how farming actually works. What is the sustainability model that the department is planning to use to make sure that these farmers actually become self-sustainable, or are we gonna be financing these farmers until the end of days? Because obviously to get finance you need to have some kind of security, and if the state is prepared to security, how is that risk management going to be taking place? Because obviously to keep on farming, sometimes you're going to succeed and sometimes the weather and, you know, everything with climate change will work against you, and you might have a failed crop. Then you're going to have to need get finance to restart. So I want to know, you know, what is the thinking about this? Because obviously this is the start of what the department planned, and it's going to expand more, which is going to cost more and more money. So how are we going to sustain this model? That is my question. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Smith. Honorable Winnie Ngwenya.
Thanks very much, Chairperson, for recognizing me, and let me take this opportunity to acknowledge everyone present in the meeting and say all protocol observed. And also thank you for the presentation, Chair. My first question is on accessibility and advertisement of information related to the state land allocation. I want to check tools of advertisement did the department use to carry and showcase the advertisement on state land allocation? And how reachable was your advertisement to the ordinary citizen and emerging farmers? The second question is based on slide 10, where you mention hectares approval in favor of small-scale farmers. What is the criteria used by the department to select and approve hectares? And what are the reasons for the hectares which were reported to have been withdrawn? My third question, Chairperson, is on the farms allocated to Gauteng province. Why my province, Gauteng, is only allocated two farms, wherein it has high agricultural potential land. Honourable Chair, this concludes my input to the meeting, and I would like to pause here for now and wait for the response. Thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mangwenya. I don't see any hand. I think Honorable Nana, or is it Honorable Mkiva?
Yafana na.
Hello.
I have a question. Ogan, thank you so much, Honorable Chair. Let's welcome the presentation. I think this is a necessary instrument which must be encouraged on the part of the state to make this consideration of this allocation. We can only say that this process must quite be very objective when we get to a point of the actual recipients that will be identified through this application system. Now, it is also important to understand, as we are given the size of the land, to also understand the price that is associated with the evaluation which has been conducted on the pieces of land that are being made available for our communities. We also want to understand the quality of the land that is being made available and all the other details that are related to the service, or whether this land or these lands or these pieces of land are actually serviced, so that we have a full picture. And then the second question is related to what Honorable Ngwenya has raised. Sometimes when these adverts are put out there, they are only made available online or on newspapers which are predominantly English, and in some instances in Afrikaans. For me, it is important that at all material times we must know that we have 11 official languages, and the vast majority of our people actually speak the indigenous languages. It is therefore critical that when these adverts are made, they are also put into these languages. And I may want to say, Chair, further on, it is important that we do not only advertise in town centers or city centers. We must go to the traditional council areas so that we can begin to give access to this, which is made available to the toiling masses of our people who ordinarily are sitting in the margins of our society. It is important that we create that balance, because the land question affects all the people, those who are in urban spaces, rural and peri-urban spaces. And this is just a word of advice, so that we don't sit with a backlash of a process that could be labeled as having favored a particular section of the community or of the country, given its location. That's what I would say, Chair, and we are looking forward to get the details that we are asking for. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mkiva. Yes, Honorable Ma. Oh, Mama.
I don't know what happened to my hand, but I had raised my hand. Are you going to give me a chance, Chair?
Yes, ma'am. Ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson, and greetings to the department and the colleagues. Just a quick one, Chairperson. Chair, I'm not so sure if the pieces of land in the Northern Cape, between the Northern Cape and the Northwest, Northern Cape in the area of Kopmansfontein and in the area Northwest, in the areas of Freiburg, were covered. There was a dispute not so long ago by the farmers that are occupying land in the areas of Freiburg and Tosca, which the state did not prioritize them whilst they occupied those farms, having made use of the grazing land and developed the farms themselves when those farms were left unattended. But when the pieces of land were advertised, the state actually disregarded those who are part of the development of those pieces of land. How far is the department in terms of resolving that? And in the Northern Cape, we don't see a lot of pieces of land being advertised. You just hear that there are people who are occupying there. But as to where those advertisements were made, the communities there are not aware of that. And those farms that were, the pieces of land that were given to people, what form of support are you giving black farmers in particular in order for them to prosper in whatever that they are doing in those pieces of land? Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes, Honorable Mamukausa, I'm done. Oh, you are done. Thank you very much. Maybe it was my network. I hope everybody has asked a question.
Yes, sir.
Honorable Chocolate, Honorable Nana, I'm not going to call you Chocolate. I'm respecting elder. You wanted to say something, Honorable Nana?
Yes, yes, sir.
Thank you very much. You can continue.
Chairperson, thanks a lot for saving my head. I have two questions, Chairperson. One relates to Gwaji in the Eastern Cape. The acting DG or the gentleman who was presenting sort of forgot, didn't really pick up his name. Really didn't give a lot of detail when it came to the Gwaji farm, except to say it's a separate process that they are following. I wanted to check whether is it possible for the department to give a lot more detail about the separate process that is being followed so far as the Gwaji farms are concerned. And how far is that process to conclusion? The second aspect, if it doesn't form part of the presentation, Chairperson, but you know, as representatives of the people, as and when opportunities arise, you must always find a way of asking this question. The department will recall that a couple of years ago, both the rural committee approached the court, forcing government to reopen the restitution process. This has caused a lot of mayhem in the Eastern Cape, particularly your old Sky, because It has actually not only caused mayhem, it has actually raised people's expectations that they will be whatever reversed or they will be paid for. I just want to check that I do know the department is still stuck with a backlog that goes as far back as 2015. I would want to check with the department how far are they with this process. As I say, it has raised people's hopes. People will be asked to submit this and that document, and any impression is being created that the following day money will be in your bank account. Can I get a comment from the department? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nana. Now I will hand over back to the department to respond to all questions that they have been asked by honorable members. Acting DG?
Thank you, Chair. We have noted the questions. I will allow my colleagues to respond first, and anything that is not responded, I will take over. Can I ask DDG Ndobe to respond first, followed by DDG Mehlomakulu?
Thank you so much, DG, and thanks to the Chair, and thanks to all honorable members, and also appreciate the questions that have been posed. To us, it helps a lot to be able to look at our blind spots as we implement programs. So we see these questions as part of trying to enhance our efforts to be better. So we're looking at them very positively.
Arnold wanted just to confirm whether the processes that we are using are processes transparent, equitable. Yes, indeed. Honorable member, you will remember that there was a deliberate effort by the department after the outcry about the processes that we're using to develop a policy that is more transparent, that is also more responsive to the challenges that are there and also being fair. That policy was approved by the cabinet, and that process and that policy was the one that formed the basis of the allocation. As I explained going further, responding to issues like that, how the criteria, you will realize that indeed it was a very, very engaging and trying to be as transparent as possible and fair. The next question talks to what happened to the Western Cape. Does it mean that the people of Western Cape are not considered if they apply for the land? Let me just qualify why Western Cape is not included in this. I've indicated that the land that we're talking about, the land that was previously owned by previous homeland, acquired for by previous homeland system, others were actually bought through the South African Development Trust, consolidated some into some kind of a buffer between what I can call homelands and the apartheid towns and settlements during that particular time. So this is the land that we're talking about. So if you realize that where those kind of land were not actually acquired during that time, the land would be very little, and that's of our assessment in the Western Cape, we cannot pick up that kind of land that could be available for this process. And I also want to indicate that that it was also a rigorous process that was also undertaken by ensuring that the land that is identified also it should not be a land that has land claims, and also it's not a land that has already been officially given to some other people. So those things quite disqualified a certain land, even if that land qualified to be meant for this process, but we have to also undertake certain. And in this case, the land that was also identified was mainly for agricultural purposes. There's no discrimination against Western Cape, and I think I need to. Let me just indicate that we can demonstrate that by indicating that we have got more land that has been allocated to Western Cape, other through processes, especially the proactive land acquisition strategy. That is an ongoing process. We acquire land almost every year in the Western Cape and in all other provinces, not this program. This was just an intervention through what we call a release of land for the distribution. Were people that were occupying land going to be displaced and bring in new people? No, that did not happen. We can demonstrate that in all fairness. I know that when this process started, because land was advertised and where there are people, and people those were in that land thought where they going to be displaced. Anyone who could prove that they have been there through a particular process, they were never displaced. What we have done now is to confirm their tenure and their stay and be able to also issue them with the legal list that will protect their tenure going forward. That is what has happened. So there are no people that have been displaced in this process. The only land that was allocated, the land vacant, not utilized, abandoned over years, that one the allocated heaps, but where the activities and also proof that these people were there, placed by whoever from government, whether during apartheid or after 1994, their rights were protected and they were never displaced. In terms of allocation per district, and I think we have provided per province, but if members want also the breakdown into the district, we can be able to provide that information. That is not a challenge. That information is available. But we do not want to bring a lot of information for the purpose of, because we thought we need to manage time as well. Also on that, Honorable Smith also made mention of the representative. I think I've already responded to that. In terms of our lists, what is the future of lists, or whether these lists are there forever? Our lists have got an option to buy, meaning that if you do well with our lists, you can also acquire the land, and that land will be transferred into your name in title. So that is there. But again, it's also know that as much as the list will not be equal to a title deed, but the list has got a level of security that you can also be able to register that list and also be able to use the list to acquire development, because banks do also recognize the security of the list. On the next one, from Honorable Ngwenya, in terms of how accessible were our processes when adverts were made. I have indicated when I started that before the advert could even come, Minister went on to various media to talk about this, to ensure that the nation is taken in terms of what needs to happen. And that was the first thing. The adverts were in the local spaces, meaning that using the local media, and that includes one, print, as well as the information that was carried on through the local radio stations, as well as the SABC stations at the local level, to ensure that all the languages are catered for in terms of this process. We went down to also create posters, as well as also engage with the, depending on the area where the farms are, the local traditional authorities were also being consulted, and also making sure that people are informed about this process even before it started, so that everybody understands. In many cases, it was information that directed people to know where to access their forms for applications, where you can be able to get the names of the farms in that particular area and select the ones that you want, and also make the necessary application, and this application will be received at a very local level. There were also those that have access to electronic device that they could be able to access this from the website of the department, and also be able to complete it and submit it electronically without actually even coming to the department. So those were various tools that were used to make sure that accessibility is there in terms of the adverts of this loan. In terms of the criteria, I'll go back to what I've indicated, that we use the beneficiary selection and land allocation policy as our basis for the allocation, which in itself clearly explain who needs to be targeted and what percentages of people in terms of the agenda, young people in the rural area, the beneficiary selection in itself is a tool that is actually trying by to be very transparent and also taking care of the land needs across the board. With regard to the withdrawals, I have indicated that the withdrawals, I know that Honorable Nana has already touched on that. I'll go back to him as I conclude. But in this case, the withdrawals were because there were different dynamics in the area of Gwachu and obviously different strategies that will ensure stability of the area and ensure that the process take a particular direction that is helpful. That led to these farms that were in Gwachu to be withdrawn from this allocation process so that we can engage in the different process, which I'll try to outline a bit and also in response to the question coming from Honorable Nana. Honorable Ngwanya is not happy that Gauteng only got two, but I believe with what I've explained earlier on, what are the reasons, there are many other factors. It was not a discrimination to Gauteng or Western Cape, but those are the factors that I've already outlined that were actually informing how we arrived at identifying those farms. And like I said, there are other processes of allocating farms through the BLAS, which is an ongoing process, and it happens every year. We budget for that, allocate land on continuous basis. This was just a specific project earmarked to address a particular need, as outlined by the president during the summer. Honorable Mkiva, in terms of the issues that you raised, very fundamental issues. I think I've already addressed one of it, which talks to the applications, and I think it's linked to what Honorable and various land that were consolidated, and these are the land that we were in. So we may not have gone to, because we were not intending to sell the land, but it was to distribute it. But once, if the land has to be disposed of, then the value of the land will be have to be determined so that we know how much value of the land that we are talking about. I hope I will have responded to the issues rather to the evaluation. And the quality of the land, presentation that came after me through BDG Nacelle indicated the value of the land the quality of the land in terms of the exercise that has taken place during land assessment as well as the land capability that actually indicates what land we are talking about. I think we spent some much time on that. In terms of services that are going along with this land, I think Mr. Mekamakul also went in details in terms of what's going to happen, the startup packages, things that will also address issues of production, infrastructure, related to the needs, depending on the needs on that particular area. I think I've addressed the issue related to the different needs for land, whether it's in urban, whether it's on the or rural areas or within the traditional councils or whatever. So the land that we're talking about cuts across, and we were able to distribute it, taking into consideration the needs of the land in that particular area. Honorable Mankausa, with regard to the Freyberg, I will not be able to be specific on the area that you have referred to, but I'm prepared to, if I get more details, I can be able to respond in detail as well. But let me assure you, as I've indicated before, there was an outcry when the advert went out that people are going to be displaced, and that did not happen. So I can assure you, Honorable, that I believe those people that you were referring to, they are still in their farms as we speak. But if there is something contrary to what I have said, I can be alerted and I can explain how that the particular area, but generally those that were in the farms and those that were farming and demonstrated that they are using the land were never removed from the farms. Taking into consideration that indeed the land, part of it, like I said, was neglected, especially during the transition from the homeland system to where we are. Some people really take care of the land, make sure that the land remain farmable, besides limitation and challenges that they have. And definitely it would have been a very uncaring of the department to could have even considered to remove them after they've been there and they've done so much on that land. The support to the beneficiaries, yes. Mr. Makulu will further elaborate on that, but he has already given an indication of what is happening in terms of the support. Honorable Nana Gwachu, I will not be able to give details. There's a process that is going on on the Gwachu, which includes engagement with the communities and their leadership. There's been challenges. Let me confess to that, Honorable Nana, because of differences of opinion between the CPA that is there as well as the traditional council or authority that is in that area. It's a matter that is a very sensitive matter, and I hope you appreciate what I'm saying, that I will not have to say anything out of context, because that could be misleading to our members. But if need be, we can be able to provide accurate information regarding the processes that are actually going on. But there are processes led from the department and involving the local leadership around that area to resolve the Gwachu matter. So I think that is how far I can go on this platform, but if more information is needed, I think we can be able to provide that. The second question from Honorable Nana was on the restitution. Yes, I'm not sure whether my colleague who led heading this portfolio is in the platform now, so that he can be able to actually give more accurate information in terms of the specific area and the information that was requested by Honorable Nana. Like you indicated, it was not part of the presentation, so I will not have those details. I don't know whether maybe DG can be able to say something related to that. But I think that's where I can conclude now. Thank you so much.
Honorable Chairperson, allow me first just to equally amplify my colleague's remarks that the department welcomes and appreciates these questions as we view them indeed as replenishing and reloading our ammunition, sharpening our weapons as we confront head on the enemy that the country is facing of triple challenges. Idindove has really cleaned up a lot of questions. Mine is just to patch up where he left off, but he really provided a comprehensive response to the questions. The very few I want to touch on that I believe he left on was on the question of training. Why provide training on the areas covered, and whether will that be expanded moving forward? The training that we started with is a holistic, generic in nature, irrespective of the commodity you are involved in, the issue of agribusiness, bookkeeping and related becomes universal when you are in the sector. That's why we started with that. But the commodity specific trainings are to follow. If a farmer is involved in a example in a livestock specific breed, could be anything, and you're dealing with heifers in Bonsmara, then a very specific Bonsmara related training will then come in, and all package that goes into that. So the answer is yes. The training will be expanded as we are rolling out the startup packages as we have prepared for these projects and these farms. Why only three provinces? It will go across all provinces affected. We just clustered, and the priority was mainly given to those with a larger number of farms and hectares like Northwest and Limpopo. That's why we started. But again, this is an ongoing process, as we indicated, even in the land capability assessment. The question was there only 654, saying we're moving ahead, and the exercise, as the presentation was showing, is very intense and very technical. So it's an ongoing process, and we're not going to stop until we have visited each and every farm that is listed in this presentation. Budget constraints, yes, we can never have enough money as government. The 150 that we have set aside for us this year is what we are using to plant the seed as we repackage and try to source more funding to ultimately ensure that all these farms are supported. So yes, fiscal is what it is, and we still look forward to get more, but this is what we have set aside and reinforced for the year. We are, excuse me, busy with. I think Vision Dover spoke to the quality of the land. I think my presentation on the land capability, we went into detail with all the 1 to 5 indexes that we categorize the quality of the land that we have. That is well articulated in the presentation. I won't repeat that. That also was the last, my last response on what's going to happen with the support. Again, we mentioned that we're providing capacity development. This is just now trying to reiterate the presentation. We've done the skills audit, we're continuing to do so, and we're making tailor-made specific interventions on skills. We're using commodity-specific training manuals to really assist. We have developed the startup packages based on that farm capabilities and the farmer himself or herself, and we have reinforced the budget to start with the provision of support, and we shall continue. This is in our annual year basis intervention until, as I said, we conclude what we need to conclude on. Those DG are the few effort DG in the laptop, but as I said, he really went to town in responding to the other questions. I give it back to you, DG. Thank you very much.
Chair, can I go on?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you very much. When I checked, almost all the questions have been answered, but one that has to do with the restitution reopening. I was checking the office of the Chief Lands Commission, COCC, Nomfundo, Doko Gobodo. She is not here. So I will attempt, although I might not have the details of where the member is referring to, Member Nana, but the process of the reopening of the restitution claim was declared unconstitutional, I think, it was declared unconstitutional, and the Office of the Chief Land Claims Commissioner was requested to finalize all the old order claims before reopening the new ones, dealing with the new a restitution claims that have been lodged. So thus far, we are still busy finalizing the old order claims before anything can be done with the new claims that were lodged from the reopening. And I think with that we submit that all the questions you were asked. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Acting DG. Members, I hope your question has been
answered. If not,
okay, Honorable Nana, you are noted. If not,
myself as well.
Yes, we'll ask the department to not start that, to go and come with the right answers for the question. I'll give members to ask or to say something.
Okay. Can I start here?
Yes, please.
Oh, okay. Thanks very much, Acting DG. It's a pity my bandwidth is pretty much unstable. I didn't really get your response, particularly to my second question. I didn't really get it in entirety. However, I do think that I could get a gist of what you were saying. Chairperson, I was the first one to actually mention that the department is still stuck with land claims that go as far back as 2015. There's no dispute about that. Maybe I wasn't so clear in my question. My interest, at DG, is in getting to understand bottlenecks that make you to be still stuck with the old, I think you said older claims. What are the bottlenecks? Where are the bottlenecks? And what are you guys doing to ensure that those bottlenecks that are addressed, old order claims are paid, so that you can start to pay the new claims? I mean, as I say, this is causing so much mayhem in communities in the Eastern Cape, and it has created so much expectation. And in fact, if I can put it to the meeting, already families are starting to have squabbles and fight about it, because if in my family everybody knows that you have put in a claim and all of a sudden I buy myself a new party, other family members are now suspecting that probably he has been given this money, that's why he could afford a party. So I hope that it is, you understand where I'm coming from. That's why I really ask the question. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Nana. Honorable Mom Kause.
Chairperson, I thank the department for partly responding to the issue that I've raised of the farms between Northern Cape and Northwest. If I'm allowed to make a written submission, I will do so with the full details of the farms that I'm speaking about and those who are displaced and who are still within their allocated farms. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mam Kause, for be proactive. I will ask the department to, because I think they don't have answers for now for those questions that was raised or the comment. Can they put it in writing
and they sent to us by not later, by Kana Thursday is a holiday, not later than Monday, by Monday, we must receive so that we can share with members, even if we are not in the meeting, but we can share with members. Is it fine, honourable members? Okay.
Chair, can I effect an issue?
Oh yes, ma'am.
That's okay, sir.
Request from honourable member Mavatum Kause that we get the written submission, at least considering that Thursday is holiday, if we can get it by today to give us enough time to comprehensively respond. On the issue of restitution, the biggest bottleneck is the budget allocation. Currently, the assessment that was done was that we need at least 60 billion to close off the order claims. On an annual basis, we get about 3.6 billion allocated to restitution, and that includes the administration and salary. So at the end, we have about 2.5 billion to settle claims. So it's inevitable that we would not be able to finalize the order claims anytime soon, on budget alone. And most of the claims that are remaining are complex claims. However, Chair, it would be appropriate, seeing that we do not have the land claims commissioner here, that perhaps that a request could be made to the department to make a presentation on what are the bottlenecks on restitution, because they are there. We just, when we were coming, we did not invite the COCC, but because this was specifically for the state land. But we are more certain that we should be able to make a presentation to yourself if it is required. We'll just wait for the instruction. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Acting DG. Honorable Mam Kause, I hope you'll write those questions and send to ASCA so that you can send to the department, so that when the department responded, it must not be only your answer, be the committee answers, because when you raise them, you raise in the meeting. So please do that so that the department can respond. Honorable members, now I'll take this opportunity to thank the department for presenting to us. It was very important meeting, because all of us, we were not understanding what is happening, especially in the issue of the state land. We were confused. Even myself, when somebody asked me about the state land that are lying there and there in the province, I didn't have answer. But today I'll be able to respond to anyone if he asked me, he or she asked me those questions. Now, I thank you, the department. We are going to release you, and then the committee continue with the business of its business. Thank you very much, Acting DG.
Thank you, Chair. On behalf of myself and the officials of the department, we thank you very much for hosting us today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am. We are continuing. I hope members, the officials, ask and help them to leave the meeting so that we can continue with our business. Must not hold members for long, because they still have some. They are still going to attend other meetings.
Yeah, most of them have left chairs, just the committee members and staff.
Okay, honourable members, we are continuing with our business of the day. Honourable members, I put an item for the quorum of the meeting, deliberating the meeting, so that all of us, we must be in, understand the quorum of the day. I mean, the quorum, how do we form quorum, and when we vote as individually, and when we vote as the provinces. I consulted the lawyers of the parliament. Today we are having Shaida from Legal, so that she can come and explain thoroughly to us as the member of this committee. Shaida, if you are in the meeting, can you explain to us?
It's still morning. Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. Apologies, my reception is very bad. It's raining extremely hard in Cape Town. And where I'm sitting, it looks like I'm losing connection. I've been on and off my laptop, and now I'm on my phone because I couldn't maintain connection on my laptop. Chair, I would like to refer members to the constitutional section that deals specifically with quorum for the National Council of Provinces, section 65 that deals with decisions of the National Council of Provinces. With your permission, Chair, may I proceed?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you, Chair. So section 65.1 says that except where the constitution provides otherwise, each province has one vote, which is cast on behalf of the province by the head of the delegation, and if all questions before the National Council of Provinces are agreed, when at least five provinces vote in favor of the question. And then it's subsection 2 of 65 provides for the Act of Parliament that must be enacted to provide for a uniform procedure in terms of which provincial delegations legislatures confer authority on delegations to cast votes on that behalf. And that was enacted. That refers to the Mandating Procedures of Provinces Act. The constitutional, that is where the National Council of Provinces derives its voting procedures from. When it takes a decision, it must do so in terms of Section 65 of the Constitution, which means that each is voting is along provincial lines. Each province has one vote, and when five provinces vote in favor, five provinces is a quorum, and when five provinces vote in favor, a matter is being decided by the council or a committee of the council. The other constitutional section which I would like to refer to is section 70, which deals with internal arrangements, proceedings and procedures of the National Council of Provinces. Section 70 says that the National Council of Provinces A may determine and control its internal arrangements, proceedings and procedures, and B, make rules and orders concerning its business with due regard to representative and participatory democracy, accountability, transparency, and public involvement. Subsection 2, the rules and orders of the National Council of Provinces must provide for A, the establishment, composition, powers, functions, procedures, and duration of its committees, B, the participation of all provinces in its proceedings in a manner consistent with democracy, and C, the participation in the proceedings of the council and its committees of minority parties represented in the council in a manner consistent with democracy whenever a matter is to be decided in accordance with Section 75. So why I refer to specifically these two sections of the Constitution is Section 65 refers specifically to when decisions have to be taken by the council or its committees, and Section 70 provides the NCOP with the power to make its own rules and control its internal arrangements according to those rules. So as members know, we have the rules of the National Council of Provinces. The rules have been amended in December. In fact, those amendments were adopted on the 14th of December 2021. And the only amendment that pertains to committee business in terms of those amendments were the one regarding the election of chairperson at the start of a parliament. I just want to see, I think that is rule 50 in the current rules, the amended rules of the version 10, edition 10 of the rule. I'm just trying to open it here on my, I have it open, I just went off because I was talking from the Constitution. Let me just, sorry. Please hold on for me, Honorable Chair. Apologies, Honorable Members. No problem. Okay. So now the only rule that was amended regarding quorum in committees was Rule 150, which speaks specifically to the election of a chairperson of a committee at the start of a parliament. For example, with the start of the sixth parliament, there was a number of concerns regarding how there's no unified procedure in terms of which committees elect chairpersons of committees. And to address that and to provide uniformity, it was decided to amend that rule and make it clear. So Rule 150 that deals with election of chair, the title of it is election of the chair of a committee, says whenever it is necessary to elect a chairperson of a committee must elect one of its members as the chairperson of the committee. The question must be put by the secretary to the committee. Two, the question may be decided only if a majority of members of the committee is present. And three, the question is decided by a majority of the votes cast. So that rule clearly indicates individual voting. I refer to Section 70 of the Constitution, which I earlier read, that said only in cases of Section 75 do we refer to individual voting. In this instance, this rule was amended to remedy the problems that committees were experiencing specifically at the start of a parliament when they elect the chairperson of a committee. It was taken into account that committees didn't have standard operating procedures in terms of committee meetings. And it was taken into account that in normal meetings across institutions, you would find that usually the usual procedure of elections are by way of individual votes, with the majority votes, and then that vote is taken in such a way. So the majority must be present, and the question will be decided by the majority of votes cast. So that provision was then worked into 150 to ensure that standardization in terms of only specifically the election of a chairperson at the start of a parliament. Members can also refer to Rule 109 of our rule, which wasn't amended, and Rule 114. Rule 109 says the chairperson of a committee, unless these rules provide otherwise, a committee must elect one of its members as chairperson of that committee. And B, the principal committee of a subcommittee must appoint the chairperson of that subcommittee. So what we tried to do when we put the proposal to the subcommittee and the rules committee was to say that Rule 109 already provides for that meeting procedure, which is generally followed in any institution. We need to clarify it in 150. And then Rule 114, in terms of quorums and decisions, says that a committee may proceed with business irrespective of the number of delegates present, but When a question is to be decided, delegates representing at least 5 provinces must be present. And 2, a question is decided by a supporting vote of at least 5 provinces. So I don't know if members can follow where I'm going with this. I'm trying to say Section 65 of the Constitution is clear. All provinces in the national, all decisions in the National Council of Provinces are taken along provincial lines. We are the House of Provinces. That is what distinguishes us from, and our mandate from, the National Assembly. Secondly, Section 70 further indicates that only when we deal with Section 75 matters, then we will deal with individual voting. Those are transposed into our rules, and we made provision for in Rule 109 and 150 on the election of chairpersons, that we to clarify in terms of that. But specifically 114 that deals with quorum and decisions, we have ensured that committees are clear that when they deal with any business before the NCLP, they deal with it in terms of provincial voting. At least 5 provinces must be present, and if 5 provinces vote in favour, the matter is agreed to. Members will also note that that is also how we operate in the House, along that constitutional provision in terms of voting. So when we deal with reports that come from committees, no matter what the subject matter or the content of that report is, if it says report of a select committee on whatever, we deal with it in terms of Section 65 of the Constitution, which is provincial voting. So only provinces vote on it. It's only when we are faced with Section 75 legislation that the House and therefore committees are mandated by the Constitution to deal with it along individual voting. Individual voting then applying. So minutes, reports of the committee, all of this. Section 65 is very clear. Our rules are clear in terms of quorums and decisions, Rule 114. I don't think I'm surprised. I think we've been having this with committees where they are not clear, but we are but baffled why committees are not clear, because they've been functioning along these lines all the time, and only now when we clarify the Rule 150 to speak to 109, which speaks to the chairperson of the committee and the election of that chairperson of the committee, we clarify that process. So that there's a smooth functioning in the committee at the start of the parliament. So there's no questions in terms of how that is done. Now we're getting more and more of these concerns from committee saying, but what about other matters before that? That hasn't changed. That remains in terms of our constitutional mandate and the voting and the decision making as provided for in the constitution, Honourable Chairperson. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Shahida, for clarifying us as the members of this committee. I hope we are not talking the... Sorry about that. I can see... Asghar, do you want to say something before I can give to Honourable Smith?
Let Mr. Smith speak first, Chair.
Okay, Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. We sit with a bit of a dilemma then in terms of this, because my question would be, it says that the head of delegation carries that province's mandate or decision. Now, our committee composition then was supposed to be one member per province, and then that member then carries the province's vote. The problem is now that we have got, in some cases, two members from the same province, from different political backgrounds for that matter, a political stance. And now when we have to make a decision, not in the case, that the head of the delegation of that province is not in that committee, but the other member of the delegation is in that committee with another member of the committee, of the delegation, then how does that decision be made? I mean, it's a struggle then between two members to say in terms of who's making the decision. Because in terms of minutes of a meeting, those minutes are not sent to a province to give a mandate to vote in a certain way in terms of that specific minutes. So it is a matter that is there in front of the members. So if there's two members from the same province, who has got the voting right and who don't? That's the dilemma that we're sitting with. And I want legal services to clarify that for us, because that is exactly why this issue is being raised. Because there isn't exactly clarity in terms of that. Because, I mean, minutes is being dealt with within the committee by all members, okay? And when it is voting on the minutes, then it is per province. But then there's two members of the same province from two political parties, or even more for that matter. I don't know if that is the case, but in our committee, there's at least two provinces that's got more than one member per province. Thank you, Chair. So if we can get clarity on that, it will help a lot.
Thank you very much, Honorable Smith, for asking that question. Honorable, Aska, before I can give Shaida.
Thank you, Chair. am I audible?
Yes.
Okay, Chairperson. The way the committee has done its business up to now, when I look at a quorum, I look at five provinces. When the province has two members, I look at who is in the political domain here. I look at the ruling party of the province. Now we have Mr. Arnolds and we have Ms. Labuschagne. So if both of them are on the platform, I recognize Ms. Labuschagne as the head of that delegation on the Western Cape. And that's how we look at five provinces present. If she is not there, then Mr. Arnolds is the de facto, because your presence is on the platform. When it comes to voting, When we dealt with the presentation today, we did not need a quorum. There is no quorum required for a presentation. A quorum is only required for voting purposes. Now, when we vote on minutes and reports, I look at members or representatives of their province. That is why I say when it comes to minutes, only members that were part of the meeting can vote, because they were there, they were part of the proceedings. So they are speaking on behalf of their province, number one. Number two, we make sure there's a quorum, then we call for a proposal and a second. When it comes to legislation 76, that is sent to the province for a conferral, that means the province now reserves the right to have a say and make inputs and give the permanent delegate designate the instructions of what to do. So when it comes to minutes and reports and the internal matters of the committee, we make sure there's a five province quorum, proposed and second, and it's adopted. When it comes to legislation, it's a different process. And when it comes to electing a chairperson and Section 75, then we go for the members presence in the committee. Chair, that would be the layman's explanation. Ashish, you guys also want to add something, Chair?
Thank you, Akka. Don't strain your voice. Saida?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Akka. I think those processes that Akka explained is exactly how the committee should be functioning. I don't think the committee is doing anything different than what is required of them in terms of the constitution, as we indicated, and I think Akka also said that the conferral of authority, that is what the mandates are for. The mandate is the conferral of authority on the permanent delegate to vote in a certain way on behalf of the province, and that only comes to play when we then dealing with the committees dealing with Section 76 legislation. And the mandating provinces act is clear, it actually stipulates when mandates are required. So reports and minutes are not mandates are not required in terms of reports and minutes. That's the internal business of the committee. That, as Mr. Smith correctly pointed out, does not go to the province. But that's the internal business of the committee. The deliberations of the committee, when a committee adopts minutes of a meeting, is saying this reflects accurately our discussions, our deliberations, and our decisions on a matter. And the members of the committee are constituted in such a way, as per the rule, that at least one, that every province must be represented at least in a committee. But due to the clustering of committees in the National Council of Provinces, we sometimes find that we have, as Mr. Smith pointed out, we have two members from a specific province with different political backgrounds. So what happens in this case, how the voting should then be going, because we cannot have practically the head of a delegation in a committee because of the composition of the National Council of Provinces, we have 54 permanent delegates. So as I said, as part of our internal arrangement, it is then done in this way that it goes according to proportional party representation. So the province which has proportionally the party representation, that delegate from that province has the voting right. So for example, in the Western Cape, if Honorable, who's now from the Western Cape, Honorable Arnold is from the Western Cape and Honorable Abastachni is from the Western Cape, both of them are members of the committee. But when it comes to voting, on voting issues, minutes, reports, only Honorable Abastachni can vote because her party carries the proportional representation of the Western Cape province. So that is how it should be working. I hope I'm clear. I hope I'm not confusing matters any further, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members.
No, thank you very much, Shaida. You are very clear. Nobody's confused. I hope members now understand the issue of quorum from today, Honorable Members. Honorable Smith?
Yes, and I just want one.
Before I'm done, before I can give you, honorable members, there are, for example, I'm saying Mama Katie and Adam Abo, Mam Kause and Aras Boman Bibi, when you are in your whip forum, you must raise this matter. And other chairpersons, and in their chairpersons forum, they must raise this matter so that we deliberate on this matter to make sure that all of us, we are in the same path, not leaving others behind. Honorable Smith, you can say whatever you wanted to say on there.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Jay. Yes, I think it was necessary for us to get very clear clarity around that, because that was the issue. So I've got one just one clarifying question, because it was now said that if, for example, let's use the example of the Western Cape, where Honorable Labaskagni and Honorable Arnolds is members of the committee. So there's two different from the Western Cape. The Arnolds is from the EFF. Labaskagni is from the DA. The DA has got the majority in the Western Cape. And what I just want to make sure whether I understood it correctly, that only the Honorable Labaskagni has got the vote for the Western Cape. And Honorable Arnolds cannot vote on behalf of the Western Cape. Do I have it correct?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. That is correct, Honorable Smith. The dilemma that you are going to be faced with is you cannot adopt a minute. A member that wasn't present in a meeting cannot be voting on that minute or proposing for adoption of that minute. For example, if you have, for example, the process that is currently followed with minutes, if there's five provinces present, and then it's asked for a seconder proposer, which works very well, but if that seconder or proposer is the member that was not present in the meeting, for example, if Honorable Avastakhni was not present in that meeting, she should rather not propose or second, because then she was not present, so she should allow another province's member which were present to rather do that secondment or the proposer. In that case, just to let the procedures flow correctly and accurately, because you cannot be part of a meeting. If I'm not part of a meeting, I do not know what transpired in that meeting. I cannot then say that, yes, the minute is a correct reflection of that meeting because I was not present there. So we would then allow other provinces, preferably not Honorable Bastashi, she was not there. But then Honorable Arnold should also not then want to take that right to vote on that matter. What we've seen in the House of recent, and it was actually since the sixth parliament, that we've seen that even when we vote on reports and the head of the delegation or the whip of that delegation is not present, another member would vote. But honorable members would note that it is only allowed if that member is from that province and specifically the party that holds the majority in that province. For example, in KZN, who is the provincial whip now? Okay, so in Eastern Cape, Honorable Bibi. And then Honorable Bibi, maybe she has a problem with the mic or she cannot be heard or whatever, then another ANC member would then be allowed to say we agree. Or the special delegate, more so, because the special delegate has all the voting powers that the permanent delegate has in terms of voting. And we always request that committees, if special delegates are present in a meeting, and they were present in a meeting where a report was considered, or they were present in a meeting where a minute was considered, and there's voting, then that special delegate
Shada? I can't hear you, Shada. Shada? Honorable member, Shada, maybe because she indicated that she has a problem of network, but I think members, we understood clear what is supposed to happen in our committee, even in other committees that we are sitting on. So I will say, like I said again, Honorable Whips, when you are in the Whips Forum, please raise this matter. Honorable Chairperson, when you are in the Chairperson Forum, raise this matter. So that when we come to the committee, we must be very clear, but We cannot say Shaila is saying something which is contrary to the constitution. He is on top of the point. So,
Chairperson, I'm still not 100% clarified. That's why I'm raising my hand again. Sorry for this, but I need to be 100% clear on this. So in the case of me and Honorable I'm struggling now with my tongue.
There you are struggling.
In the case of minutes and reports, I do not have any voting right. That is basically how I understand it now. So if the Honorable Mama Rubalo, why am I struggling with her surname? Tebogo, that if she's not in, then it, and I am in, I cannot vote because she's the one who carries the vote. That's how I understand it now. So I want to be clear whether I understand it correctly.
Ada? Yes, Ada? I can see your hand.
Chairperson. Chairperson.
Hi, Akka. I can see Shaida is she's raising her hand.
Yeah, but I think she's got a problem with the connection. I think, if I may answer, what Shaida says is that in the case of Limpopo, Ms. Mamrubela would have the vote. But when we as the committee, you also need to separate quorum from voting. If the representative of the province is there, so in the case of Limpopo, the way I understand it, Shaida can correct me if I'm wrong. The way I understand it, if Mr. Smith is present and Ms. Mamrubela is not, we still have a quorum. We have a representative from the province, but Mr. Smith may not vote because he is not the provincial representation leader.
That's also how I understand it, yes.
That's correct. I'm so sorry, Honorable Smith. It seems every time you speak, I chair through you. I just switch off. The weather is terrible here, but I mean, my connection is... That's exactly correct, as guys put it now. But I also just wanted to bring in the issue around the special delegate. If the permanent delegate that represents the head of the province in the committee is not there, there's no reason. In fact, the special delegate should be the one that then votes, provided the special delegate is from the same party that holds the majority in that province. That was just the last bit that I wanted to add. But as well, 100%, and your understanding then, Mr. Smith, is correct. Thank you so much. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, can I also just one last thing is that when we do minutes from now onwards, members have to separate quorum from voting power. Quorum would be now anybody from the province, whether it's Mr. Smith, Ms. Mamrubela, they will form part of the quorum. The person carrying the provincial representation is the one allowed to vote. So moving forward, I think everybody's on the same page now with regards to that chairperson. I think that does make things a lot clearer and simpler.
Thank you very much, Asuka, and thank you very much. Let me take this opportunity to thank our legal guru, Ms. Shaida, to come and clarify us, because some of us, we were not understanding some there and there, how should we do things. the legal representative, not the legal gurus. I'm so sorry to say that. Now we are continuing. Ma'am Shaida, thank you very much for clarifying us.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you to honorable members. May I be allowed to leave the platform? We are preparing for the sitting.
Thank you very much. We wanted to release you. Now we continue with the minutes of previous meeting. Honorable members, I put the minutes in front of you I don't know whether did you receive the minutes in time and peruse them. If there are any corrections that you want to correct, can you do so? You are allowed to do so.
Chairperson,
Honorable Momo.
Thanks very much, Chair. Since we have got the minutes early, I would like to adopt the minutes as it is. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ngwenya. Any seconder?
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson, Mampipi Mama. Second.
Thank you, Mama.
Thanks, Mama.
Mama.
Now, minutes have been adopted. Thank you very much, honorable members, for taking part in this meeting of today, whereby really it was an eye-opener for us. Now we will go to our constituency in understanding what is happening around our province, especially on the issues of the state land and other things that we might need to know or to clarify our communities during our constituency. Now this is taking us to the end of the meeting of today. Thank you very much, honorable members. This meeting is officially adjourned.
Thank you, Mama.
Mama, almost like a say, wait, whoa, stand up, I go.
Thank you.
Oh, hi, Baba Munse. You are like Mama.
Yeah, Mama.
The recording has stopped.